Dave Peterson, great new album, Old Time Power. You know, he is, his band is 1946. David's always playing somewhere. You can always catch him. He's a very busy performer. He is the master of what I would call the face-melting G-Run. If you've ever seen David perform either with himself or his band, 1946, he'll put the guitar right in the mic and just burn off a G-Run right in your face. And we talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about this great new gospel album, Old Time Power, which is one of those that'll absolutely rattle your soul. I guarantee it. Coming up, David Peterson. Well, I'm really happy to welcome David Peterson to Unreal Bluegrass. Dave, how you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great, Steve. I really thank you for having me on here tonight.
Listen, I've been a fan. I think the first 1946 album, I think, was, what, 2001?
Yes.
Yep, I got it.
Yeah, that was the first band release. I do have one record before that, which is a gospel record called Jesus Use Me. But, yeah, that was the first band record.
Well, just to tell you what kind of a fan I am, I bought it, and then the CD got broke, and I bought it again. So you count me
should've
for two sales.
No, that's should've all right. Told me how to give you one.
Well, that's fair. You know, I was getting it out of the something, and it just cracked. It's one of those weird things. I said, man, I got to have this back because it's just a good one to have. I get it in the rotation on a regular basis, and now you got a great new one, Old Time Power, David Peterson's Old Time Power, and it's powerful stuff, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's another gospel record. And it felt right. It was the 20-year anniversary of moving to Nashville. And I thought, well, it's been 20 years since I made a gospel record. It's time. It's the seventh record in the progression. So.
Well, it's now, and this one you just has your name. It doesn't have the 1946 name attached to it.
No, it's a solo record, pretty much. There'll be another 46 situation.
Sure.
Probably the next record I do will be that.
We were talking off the air, David, that to me this is, let's put it this way, you could get this album, or if you happen to have Dave Peterson in a band, put him on a street corner, and within a minute and a half of the first song of this album, you'd have a revival right there in the street.
You know what? I wouldn't turn it down. Let's try it.
Boy,
let's
tell you what.
Go out there.
It's powerful. Each one of these songs is just. I've been listening to it. I try when I get a guest on. Of course, I want to know the music, but I just want to listen nonstop to the same thing. So I carry it around with me, and wherever I can plug it in, I plug it in. And these things bring back so many great memories to me from different old family bands that were in one side of my family, and a lot of these things that they would play at the farm when the lights went out and you know, the work was done. Everybody get an instrument out of somewhere. And boy, I tell you, these are just, I want to talk a little bit to you about the selection of the tunes on it, but man, oh man, it's just a fine, you know, if I've played the, There Is Power in the Blood. I mean, you could start any Sunday gospel show, booked around that song right there.
That's an old song.
Mm-hmm.
That song goes back to the 1800s. I think it goes back to 1878, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and, I don't remember, but I'm going to take your word for it.
It's a good one, man.
Oh, man, the whole thing is, how did you, now, inside the note, you have a note inside here that the recording process was like almost 2.5 years. When you put in here, the recording was from October 12 to February 2015. How did you, is it just when you hit, because the band members on this one, the musicians are pretty consistent. There's a couple differences, but how did you keep the idea together that long?
Well, what it was, it's me and the we recorded it at Mark Thornton's studio, and which is in Madison, Tennessee, which is just north of Nashville, just the next town north of there.
Okay.
And Mark Thornton has a studio called Sidekick Studios up there, which I'd done a lot of singing for him, been hired to sing on different records he produced, you know. And I knew the studio and I knew him. He's a great thumb-style guitar player, too. He plays Chet Atkins style, and he can play Travis and all that stuff, you know. And so he plays country music with me sometimes when I play with the country band. And we were going to do a hillbilly gospel record, and initially it was going to not be bluegrass. And but one thing led to another, and it didn't come together. So I decided, well, I'm going to make a bluegrass record. So the stuff that we started in 2012, I just decided to go bluegrass. And then the majority of the record was recorded in right at the end of 2014 and the beginning of 2015.
Okay.
And there's the songs with Grisman, with David Grisman. He was going to be in town right around Thanksgiving of 2014. And so he was in town doing some several other things. And the Sunday after Thanksgiving there, we piled in. He had a window of time available. He had about 4 or 5 hours available before he had to go to the airport. So we piled in the studio over there, and we cut 5 songs in about that many hours. We just got in there, and we sat in a circle facing in. Me and Larry Mars, who sang tenor, and Stuart sang some other parts. Stuart Duncan sang some baritone with us, and Compton sang some bass. But we got in there, and we cut it live in one room with no headphones.
Well, see, and I was going to ask you about that, too, and I just want to follow up on that. Inside the note, you mentioned that style of recording, which I think, and the purpose is, you have a stated reason as to why you wanted to do that, and I want to ask you to elaborate on that a little bit. I think I understand what you're doing, but let the listeners know a little bit why that's a method that you wanted to use on these tunes.
Well, simply because I feel like we in bluegrass as a genre have started to rely a little too heavily on technology, and I think I would love to see a return to bluegrass musicians as a whole cutting records live, because there's nothing that substitutes the feeling of that when the musicians actually play off of one another. And like they do in any other context, like they do on a live stage.
On stage,
show,
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And I think bluegrass music is the perfect vehicle for live recording. I think it feels better. It's an event when it happens. And I wanted to get back to the stuff that made me want to sing and play bluegrass, which was Bill Monroe and the Stanley Brothers, Jimmy Martin, all those guys. That's how they cut their records.
Mm-hmm.
They cut them live, and they feel, and because of it, they feel tremendous. The timing, it's just, there's a beautiful, the beautiful feeling to the music. It's really danceable and stuff, you know. And so I decided, well, you know what? Let's just do that. Because I recorded a country record. You may or may not have heard of Coming On Strong. It's a country record I did back a few years ago, and that's how we recorded that record. Same way, we recorded it live in one room with no headphones. So I said, well, I'm going to do that for my next bluegrass record, and that's how we did it. And it accomplished what I wanted to have happen. It's we actually we sat there and we played off one another. We had a great time. We laughed.
Oh, cool.
We enjoyed ourselves, you know.
So. You let Charlie Cushman in a circle with that banjo? And
yeah, he was standing. He was right across the circle from me. I stood up, and then Larry Mars stood to my right and sang tenor right beside me. Stuart was standing to the right of him. He wanted to stand and play. Then Charlie was sitting down and going to the right of Stewart. Then next to him was Grisman.
Oh, boy.
Or Mike Compton, depending on the session. Because Compton played mandolin on the rest of the record. Dave Harvey is on one cut.
Mm-hmm. Great mandolin player and great mandolin maker, too. Great luthier.
Yeah, absolutely, man. He's another Ohio guy from around Dayton.
That's right.
Originally.
That's right.
And so there's 3 great mandolin players on the record, but then of course next to the mandolin was Dennis Crouch on upright, and then my friend Richard Bennett.
Oh yeah,
Richard Bennett from Nashville, not Knoxville. Richard Bennett. There's a couple Richard Bennetts. This is Richard, who lives in Nashville, who has been a record producer for years. Produced people like Emmylou Harris and Steve Earle, and different. He says Marty Stewart. He's had a heck of a run. Currently plays guitar with Mark Knopfler. And
really,
but he told me his absolute dream gig is to play archtop, sock rhythm guitar, and a bluegrass
band. Well, I was going to say, he's playing archtop, which you don't often see in him, but I looked at it and I thought, well, there, I love archtop guitars. You just don't see him much in this setting. So you made his dream come true.
he made mine come true. We'd enjoyed making that country record together, too, because Richard was all over that playing electric guitar and some rhythm, too. And come time to do a bluegrass record, I said, come on, let's do this. And he had a 1946 Gibson L4.
Oh, man.
And great guitar, and it sounded so good. In various contexts, Mike Compton was on the record, too. He would be there some days. Dave Harvey played the Louis Belson mandolin on this record, which... is a one-off mandolin that Gibson made for mandolin player Louis Belson. Of course, his son was the jazz drummer.
Louis Belson, no kidding.
Yeah. So This guy was involved with Gibson. He was involved in mandolin orchestras and also worked for Gibson. And he asked them to make him an F4 with no bottom body point, so that he could get his hand all the way up to the end of the fingerboard extension, so he wouldn't run into that point on the bottom of the mandolin. It's an odd-looking instrument, but, man, it sounds good. And it's a one-off. It's very rare. So Dave Harvey has that, and he played it on Mansion Over the Hilltop. So.
Boy, there's so many great players. I mean, I thumb through the list. I'm thinking, wow, this is a powerful group. I can't imagine anyway, but sitting around with a group like this, it must be when you're just right in proximity and you're breathing the same air and singing the same air and feeling the vibe off of, you can actually feel the sound if you're sitting next to some of these people and just that whole thing and putting it on a record. I think it's a great idea. I think it works really well. I think you're right. You're absolutely right. That's the way it should go.
It doesn't make sense to me that we would change how only for recording concerns. You know, people say, well, you need to be in separate rooms to get isolation so you can mix the record better. That's a valid point. There are some concessions we had to make in mixing this record because we didn't use any baffling.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of let it all run together. But, you know, we were able to mix the record just fine. And you can hear a lot of room in the recording, which suits me. And I just wanted to capture some performances, and I'm pleased with what the results were. Larry Mars did play bass on upright bass on some of the record too.
Okay.
And Shad Cobb's playing a little.
Oh yeah, let's not forget.
Little fiddle on some of it, and as well as Stuart Duncan, and also Rob Ikes did play some slide guitar.
Get them all in there, man, because this is a star-studded. This is a star-studded album. I mean, it's just amazing how many people are on it, and
we had fun with it.
Oh my God, you must have. And I think too, on this whole recording process of sitting around, I think when you have that caliber musician, you know, they kind of know how, don't they understand how to fit and they don't have to always be told, you know, lay back or they're going to cut you back. They know how to fit. They know when they're too loud. They know when these guys have the taste to know, you know, when they're playing at the right volume and where they should come in.
Oh yeah. These guys are the pros and, I've worked with all of them before. And, of course, you know, you come in and, you know, you have separate individuals. You come in and if they've never heard the tune before, you have to, you have to show them the tune and then talk about it and discuss it, rehearse it. And even when we rehearsed, we rolled tape. We recorded to a 2-inch 24 track.
Oh, good.
And even while we rehearsed, we rolled tape just in case we caught one, you know. And but most of the time we got it in the first three takes, you know.
I think the nitty gritty, I think Will the Circle Be Unbroken was recorded that way.
It was.
I've talked to John McEwen about it, and he said because I asked him, how did you get, because there's all those neat little bits of conversation that they sneak in there. You got Maybell talking about kind of do this. Yeah. And John just said, I'll tell you how we did it. We just put that tape in and it ran the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And that's how they got all those great little nuances in there of different little bits and pieces. And I love that whole feel. You can feel it. You can feel it when you listen to something like this, that it's a, it just has that more intimate feeling to it. I really do enjoy that part. I'm glad you did it. Works out great.
You know, it's like some of the best jazz records that we love, like Louie and Ella.
Yeah.
They're just
going, man.
They just put a couple overheads, and they went, man. Boy, that's one of those two volumes are some of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just so, you know, we hope to capture those kind of things. We don't put ourselves on that level, obviously, but you know, good things happen when musicians play off of one another. And we just had a ball doing it. I can't, you know, honestly, I can't wait to do another one. I can't wait for the next installment.
You, there was on social media, you were kind of indicating that you were going to put this out, and you put a lot of effort into getting this out. I think pretty much, I think you're the guy. I mean, aren't you, would I say you're the producer of this? Is that a fair statement?
Yes. You know, when you get those musicians of that caliber, you always listen to any ideas anybody may have because they've had so much experience. And sometimes I knew exactly what I wanted. Other times, you know, we'd kick it around. Somebody would suggest something, and we'd entertain it. We'd try it. If we liked it, we went with it. If we didn't, I tried somebody else, something else, you know. But yes, I've produced all my own records pretty much. Me and Dennis Crouch produced a country record, but all the other records I've ever done, most of them, that first band record was more of a collaboration with all the guys in the band.
Okay.
That's when Charlie Darrington was in the band and what have you. So we self-produced that one, but yeah, most all my records I have produced, and just simply to keep it coherent. And sometimes I know what I want. Other times it's fun just to let things take form, you know.
David and everybody that's listening to this program knows you and knows 1946 and knows that great sound. And by the way, I have to tell you this: if you've ever seen David live, David has the most in-your-face G runs I've ever seen in my life. he gets right up in the mic, and buddy, you know that's a G run, and they're great. They just pop off of the stage. I love it. I love the way you do it because you hold it up just the old way, right to the mic, and you just fire one off.
You know, sometimes I do that. You know, I've might have calmed down a little bit as I've gotten a little older, but it was all in good fun.
It's part of the show, but it also draws attention to what you. I like it. I mean, I like it in there myself. But
I like, you know, I like the real raw bluegrass.
Yeah,
and I knew Jimmy Martin and
boy.
I was around some really good bluegrass musicians as well when I was growing up, and I got to see Joe Val live a bunch of times when I was a teenager growing up in New England, and Joe Val and the New England Bluegrass Boys. He had a guitar player playing for him named Dave Haney at the time. Dave's just a great guitar player. Also before him was Dave Dillon.
Okay.
And he happens to be one of my very favorite rhythm guitar players, and he always loved to throw runs. But, yeah, Jimmy, all the first-generation guys, Lester Flatt, of course, being the crown jewel of that, they all like to throw runs. And I kind of like to hear that in bluegrass.
I do,
you know?
Too. If you're in the audience, it reminds you where you are. You're at a bluegrass show. That's how you know that for certain. In case you wonder what you walked into, let everybody know. Like I said, everybody knows your sound and the great music that you do, and everybody knows the answer to this too. But in your mind, the connection that gospel and bluegrass is always going to have, and it's real evident in all the stuff that you do. And now you've done an entire gospel album. What's your thumbnail explanation is that connection between the gospel sound and the bluegrass sound, the church sound and the bluegrass sound that we all know?
Well, it's just to take a walk down American history lane here. Some of the first songbooks published in this country were gospel or sacred music, the Great Camp Meeting Revivals in Cane Ridge, Kentucky, called the Second Great Awakening, took place around the turn of the 19th century, about 1799 through 1801, right in there. And a lot of great music came out of that revival, that nationwide revival. The birth of what you'd call the camp meeting song came from that.
Okay.
And songs like I'm Bound for the Promised Land and different things that are still sung today. Of course, one of the first hymn books published in this country that came kind of from that movement was the Sacred Harp. And they still have Sacred Harp singings all around the U.S.
Sure, yeah, sure.
It's a five-tone shape note book, Fa Sol La Mi, the tones in that. And then later on, the seven-tone stuff with Stamps Baxter and the James Bond stuff came. But the connection that stuff has to bluegrass was that's where Bill Monroe learned how to sing with all his brothers, because they would go to these singing schools over there that some of the publishing companies, such as James Vaughn Publishing or Stamps Baxter, I think he came more out of the seven-tone stuff, so it was probably Vaughn or Baxter. They would got people around to conduct singing schools, these tunesmiths that would teach people how to sing the shape note, because they didn't have to know how to read standard notation, you know.
Yeah, it was
the
directed.
Would be represented with shapes,
yeah.
You know. So that's where Bill Monroe and Charlie and all the rest of the brothers, you know, Birch, all those guys, they learned how to sing from those singing schools.
Okay.
And there's your big connection to gospel music,
right.
And as far as to what to bluegrass, and of course, you know. All these songs that are on this record are songs I remember that I've always loved. I always intended to record some of those. And this was a good chance. It's a really good chance to do some of that.
There's so many great. And I'm glad you did it, because a lot of them ring a bell to me, and I have two different experiences in my family life where they kind of resonate different instances, but I've heard so many of these, and everybody's heard Go Tell It on the Mountain. I mean, if you've ever walked past a church, you've heard that one, but I mean, you've got old time power and you've got uplifting tempos, and you've got those ones that really just, you know, if I could hear my mother pray again I searched heaven for you. I mean, my goodness. This is all, I mean, you can just, it's the whole gamut, man. It's the whole gamut of the emotion that you would want from sacred and gospel music. This is a rock. I would tell anyone who wanted to start doing a bluegrass Sunday bluegrass show over air or wherever, I would say start with this one. If you're starting out brand new, get this album, and then that'll get you through the rest of it.
Thank you.
Oh man, it's wonderful.
You.
Wonderful stuff.
I wanted to do stuff on the record that was unmistakably gospel music. Because, you know, it's the gospel is about redemption, you know.
It's all positive.
You know, there's power in the blood. It says there in Revelation that the people who are believers in Jesus overcame the devil by the blood of the Lamb, who is Jesus, and the word of their testimony. And I just wanted to go ahead and just pay tribute to who he is, you know, and what that's all about. Some of the other stuff I've always loved. There's a Lubin Brothers tune on that record
always
loved called I'll Never Go Back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a song that I heard from they did a pilot for a radio show they were going to do in Birmingham in the early 50s called Songs That Tell a Story. And Rounder ended up putting out that pilot. They got it from Charlie Lubin. And that song, I'll Never Go Back, was on that radio show. They did a couple shows worth that they pre-recorded, you know, complete with an announcer and everything. Tice Taraway, I remember his name.
Wow, cool.
The guy that was the announcer on that. But it was just Charlie and Ira playing guitar and mandolin and singing duets. And one of the songs was I'll Never Go Back, which they never commercially recorded.
Okay.
They never recorded it for a record label. It just happened to end up on this radio show they did. And I thought, well, man, I'm going to do this. You know, I've always had it on the back of my mind to do that. And really happy with the way that one came out on the record.
Oh, you know, that then Love Lifted Me. There's so many positive. That's a thing, too, that I think people need. If they're not real experienced in gospel and sacred music, I mean, there are times to be sad about things that happen in life, certainly, and church reflects that. But so many mm-hmm. of the tunes you've picked here are positive and lifting up the spirit is the way I would describe it. And if you listen to this, if you listen to the whole album, let me flip this over. I can see it. Old Time Power. I don't like to keep mm-hmm. my mic too much. Listen to the whole thing. You're going to be in an up mood, I believe. If you listen to this thing, it's going to be an up. You're going to come out of it listening with a positive uplifting feeling, I think.
And that's what I hope, because the word gospel itself means
good news.
Good news.
Exactly.
It's good news. It's the good news is that even though we live in a fallen state as mankind, we can be restored to fellowship with God through Jesus, and that's the good news. We put our trust in Him. We call on whosoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. You know, that's what the gospel is. And those songs reflect that. And there are some songs that are scary on that record, such as Trials, Troubles, Tribulations,
yes.
which is about the Great Tribulation. But even that has hope. I'll be carried home by Jesus and forever will with Him be. That's in that song.
None of these songs leave you hanging.
Mm.
there's always that. There's circle back on that redemption. There's none of these tunes if the tempo just isn't lifting you up. None of them leave you hanging. There's always that element of redemption, which I guess is what you almost have to have in a gospel record or mm-hmm. sacred music. But yeah, they all mm-hmm. come here. I've not heard this before. This Revelation chapter 5, which you end the album on. It's a recitation from you mostly, but I'm not familiar with that at all.
I'll tell you where it came from. It came from me sitting up late at night, just being quiet and listening. And I, in my personal readings, was reading Revelation chapter 5 at
okay.
the time, and a thought came to me: I want you to read this. I want you to do a recitation. And the backdrop will be the song "I Have Decided to Follow Jesus," which is a classic.
Mm-hmm.
That's as much as an old time gospel number as it gets, you know. So that's what happened. I just had the thought late at night in the quiet. I decided to do kind of a shuffler.
Mm-hmm.
style cross picking on the guitar. It was Larry Marsh playing upright and Shad Cobb on the D cross-tuned fiddle, the old mountain style. And the three of us piled up in there, and we cut it. We played it, and then at the end we sang, "I've Decided to Follow Jesus." Basically, that song is a verbatim. I read it from the Authorized King James Version. It's the last book of the Bible, Revelation, mm-hmm. chapter 5.
Yeah, it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Gets the message, and I just thought, well, I had to ask you. I'm okay feeling stupid if I don't ask the question where it came from.
Not at all, because that song is just something that came.
Okay, good.
It's an invention.
Oh, good. I thought, well, I missed this one by a mile, but I got to ask. So I'm glad. The description of what you're saying makes perfect sense to me now, and that's the last cut on the album. And the whole thing is, let me ask you this off the wall: bands that I've played with and my experience as a child and. In farm settings and farmhouse settings when they'd pick and play at night. I've always felt this, and it's not on here, but Will the Circle Be Unbroken, I believe, is a happy song.
Yeah.
And friends of mine who didn't have that same experience, I would hear it after funerals and whatnot out in what I call in the country. And it was always uplifting. Now, friends of mine didn't have that experience that I picked in different little bands with around here. They almost want to make it a dirge type of thing. And I keep saying, you know, this is not – I've seen where the people are at the end of it where they were jumping and dancing and it's a happy song because we're going to see you again. But I kept – and they said, no, it's sad. I said, I don't want this tempo. I want it – it's not a fun song, but the song is uplifting. You need to sing it with that in mind. And I think I'm right on that. I just could never get confirmation from it before.
Even though, you know, when the circle's broken, we're sad. That means somebody's left
sure.
us. But there's a better home awaiting
exactly.
in the sky. We're going to see those people if we know the Lord, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we call on his name, you know. And ultimately, it is a happy song.
It
I've
is.
Never played it. In any other field than upbeat tempo, if I've ever played that song, usually in the key of A, you know, thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I've never heard it done. You mentioned the song earlier. The Monroe Brothers did the song "I Dreamed I Searched Heaven for You,"
which is on your album here. Yeah,
that's on the record, and it's on Old Time Power. But they also did a version of "Will the Circle Be Unbroken," which was a little more contemplative, you know, their version of it. But that's where I got the idea to do "I Dreamed I Searched Heaven for You," which predates the Monroe Brothers, you know, but. That's a sobering song.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's probably one that's the most. That song is probably the most sobering tune on the record. But that's where I heard it from was Bill and Charlie, from the stuff they did for RCA Bluebird Records.
All this great history you bring, David. It's fun to talk to someone like you because you've. Not to be trite, but you've done your homework, but you actually lived your homework. You listen to this music because you love it. When you get into the studio, these are things that are still in your soul. It's not like you're going out and book learning them, but you've lived and learned and heard all these things and bring them to the table, which is great.
I try to. That's one I always have in the back burner. I put it, if I can hear a song one time and I have a filing system in my brain, I put it back in the file saying, I'm going to do that one day, you know. That was one I always intended to do, but never had the opportunity. And I thought, well, I'm going to do some of the stuff that I've been meaning to do here on this record.
You know, the one that kind of makes me laugh, and I told you this off the air, but the one my mother prays loud in her sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And I mentioned to my grandmother that part of my mother's family is from Somerset, and she actually did. I've actually seen the record. She was arrested for praying too loud on the streets of Somerset. That's a true story. And I heard that, and I thought she would, you know, she might be a little loud. She was the one that if you get around, you travel around the different families on the holidays, you might be in her home on a, you know, New Year's or whatever, a big football game. Once you all got gathered around, she turned the TV off and started preaching, which, you know, I bless her heart. She was true blue, man. She was, here's a time to save somebody. And, she never let up on it. And she
meant business.
She did, buddy. And you knew it was going to happen. You knew the longest game in the history of football. If you remember that one, I was watching that one at her house when it was time to turn it off and preach. I never saw the end of the longest game. Now, truth is, David, I'd rather have that memory of her turning that TV off and preaching than actually seeing the game. I've seen the results of it, but to me, that memory still is just a cool thing to have. Well, you know, it's her house and she's going to preach.
You'll never forget that.
Oh, God, no. God, no. Oh, God.
That's so cool, man. You know where that song came from?
No.
That song was written by Oney Wheeler, who was from East Tennessee, and he's from past Knoxville over that way kind of and Oney Wheeler had his own record deal at one time. I think he was on Mercury, and so he had his own deal. He did some recording for them, and he also played bass with Flat and Scruggs in the mid-50s. He was out with the Foggy Mountain Boys doing some things, and they actually recorded that song, by the way. Flat and Scruggs did. They recorded it, gosh. So Benny Martin was on that, so it must have been 1952.
Okay.
Right in there. And they have an excellent version of that song, which is where I first heard it. But I've since heard Oney Wheeler's own version of that as well. And but also he played harmonica with Roy Acuff on the Opry. And The interesting story about owning Wheeler is that he was, as far as I know, the only person to have ever died on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry. He, that was his last thing he ever did was while he was performing on on the Opry, he passed away. So
wow.
I think he was playing with Acuff. And I'm not sure if they were actually performing when it happened, but he was on the stage and the Opry was taking place at the time.
Wow, I did not know that. That's an interesting connection to that tune.
Yeah, he wrote that song.
Okay,
and I've always liked it, and Flash Frog sang it as a trio. We kept it as a duet. We did it in the brother duet style, me and Larry Morris, and. I kind of like that song a lot. I was pleased to get to do it. That's another one I've always wanted to record but never had the chance.
Well, see what happens when you're driving the bus, man, and when you're putting the songs, you put what you want on there.
That's right.
That's the freedom of it.
You know, and we piled up in there and did it. And we had a really good time. And that's one I enjoy. Yeah, I'm rehearsing a new band. We worked on that song last night with the new members.
Did you? Okay.
Because
you told me, I think we might have been off the air. We were just chatting that you are going to get 1946 back together and get out a little bit here coming up, right?
It's always been alive. It's never gone away, but my focus was elsewhere sometimes. I did this country record, and I just had the desire to do it, and I kind of got my attention just got off onto doing some of that. I never abandoned bluegrass or 46. It just, but I think it's going to be more of a focus now.
Well, if people know David and his music, it's not unusual for you to show up and do a gig with a guitar and just sing and play by yourself. And I think you're trying to keep the music out there and keep yourself out there. And whether it's with 1946 or with some, couple local guys in Nashville, you can find Dave Peterson playing somewhere every night.
5 days a week.
5 days a week, brother.
Five days a week somewhere.
Yep.
Somewhere in the United States.
It's Peterson time somewhere. Instead of 5 o'clock somewhere, it's Peterson time somewhere.
But, I want to put this out there. If you want to have the traditional sounds of 40, David Peterson in 1946, request it from your disc jockeys, such as Steve Martin.
Yeah, man.
And also request that your festival promoters would have us, because it doesn't do me any good to try to tell somebody that they need to have us come
That's
to play.
Right. You're right.
You can't promote yourself as good as somebody else can. I don't want to promote myself. I want, if you've enjoyed what we've done, put a good word in. Ask your promoters to have us, and you know what? We will be there. And that's how most of the good stuff happens.
You're right.
Work.
You're right. Well, we got you have of course, there's a website people can find you. If they look for you in the 1946 website, will they find out about Old Time Power? I assume, and you take this with you and sell it.
Yes, they will. 1946band.com is the website. That'll direct you to Facebook. There'll be links to Facebook on there.
Okay.
And also CD Baby.
Yes.
You can pick the record up, or you can just order it from me.
Okay.
But when it directs you to Facebook, anything that I'm usually, any shows I'm doing, I always put them on there, advertise and talk about them. And keep an eye out for Old Time Power, because right now I'm trying to sell it directly to people, but you're going to be able to get it on CD Baby very shortly. So.
It's just top to bottom powerful. Power's a good, it's old time power top to bottom. Let me ask you this on the front of it, because I see these little things. When I do interviews, I like to have the CD in my hand, but at the top of this paper, the opening says Excelsior Edition. What's that all about?
What that is, of course, my friend Mike Armistead, who has the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band.
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And Mike was the guy that designed the cover of that record.
Okay.
And what he did was he used part of an old songbook that he had on either for James, probably a James Vaughn publishing company songbook,
okay. All right.
Which had the paper covers, you know?
Yeah, needle brown paper, yeah.
I think he probably on one of those was that said Excelsior on there, which I can't think of a better word to describe
well,
the music.
Well, I just figured I'd ask you because it was there. I figure everything's on purpose, but that makes perfect sense to me.
I didn't plan that.
Well,
it just showed up.
Well, now you got to get ready for the question because I put it out there. Somebody else might pick up and say, what's the Excelsior edition, David? And you can make a story or tell the one you just told, either one. This has been a blast. Listen, do you have the CD in front of you or do you have the liner notes in front of you?
I don't, but right. You can ask me a question because I know what's in them.
All right, here's what I want to ask you to do because I've enjoyed talking to you. I know you got stuff to do, but there's a on the inside, David, and I believe it's your words at the top of the page before it describes the time of the recording and where it was mixed and whatnot. There's a quote at the top. If you don't have it right handy, I'll read it to you because I want this on the air.
Okay.
As you open the CD up, folks, I'll just tell you, David, this is what it says. Thank you, Jesus, for your grace that forgives, your blood that cleanses, and your spirit that empowers. You've been good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Those are David's words, correct?
I meant those words, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the way I feel about it. That's what it's all about at the end of the day, you know, Steve. We can do our careers, and we can do all the kinds of things, and we can strive and, you know, try to get somewhere and do this or that. But at the end of the day, what really matters is that we know the person that put us here,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that's what I want the record to communicate, that, hey, listen, there is a person named Jesus, and he wants to know you. And he's waiting for you to ask him, hey, come into my life,
mm-hmm.
take over, take the reins, you know. And in the context of that, everything that's happened to me and all I've been through then has meaning. It makes sense to me at that point, you know, that it all led to him, you know. And that's what the purpose of music is to me. Since you asked,
sure.
I'm going to just tell you.
Yeah, man.
Make
a joyful noise.
I never did believe that music existed so we could be a star.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that it exists to sing forth his praises. And I believe it also, in tandem with that, exists to set people free. If people, because Jesus said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He's anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, to set the captives free, recovering of sight to the blind, and, you know, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. So that's what I think the purpose of music is. And if we get any kind of notoriety in the midst of that, whatever, but really, I think that's why music exists, and that's why I want to do this record. Not to say that I'm perfect by any means, believe me, because if you get to know me, you're going to see some rough edges, but I know who is perfect, and I know who to put my trust in, and that's the way that quote you read, that's the way I feel about it.
I felt, when I read that, I thought this will give everybody a good map into what David's doing with Old Time Power, the album, and that's why I wanted to read that again before we got out, because I knew that was put there by you, I knew they were your words, I could tell by the tense that was used in them, and I wanted to give you that opportunity that you just took, which I appreciate very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Hey, listen.
This has been a real joy and a pleasure, and I want to thank you for playing my music because I know you don't have to. And nobody's saying, telling you what you have to do. You did it because you want to, and for that I thank you.
Well, listen, man, it's absolute pleasure. Dave Peterson, Old Time Power, the new gospel sacred. It's powerful stuff. It's a good title because every time I say it, I think, yeah, this is powerful stuff. So look for David out there. We'll catch up to you ripping up and down the road somewhere, and you give me a holler. We'll get some local food without naming brands, but we'll find
Let's
something.
Let's get some Cincinnati chili.
Cincinnati chili. That's a good description. All right, David. Listen, man, I appreciate your time so much and your music, and we'll catch up to you live somewhere. I guarantee it.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, bud. Talk to you. That was fun. Thanks so much, David Peterson, for taking that time. And, you know, I say this often, not all the time, but I don't use a script. I don't cut things out. I don't edit things. The only things I edit out is if I bump the microphone or drop something. I get those sounds out, which can be done. But when someone like David comes on this program, it's pretty much, you know, we just go with whatever happens and we talk about the topics and we veer wherever we want to and we pretty much take as long as we want. Thanks, David. That was, I enjoyed that immensely. Great album, Old Time Power. Thanks for listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. Thanks, David Peterson.